Can you see where this boy is suicidal? A lot of you ask me questions, took the effort, and I'm not answering your question. I'm sure you're going to feel bad because I didn't answer your questions. Because you made an effort to make contact, and I'm not going to respond to you. That makes you feel bad. I tried to respond to the question, but there's only that much time. So we need to be responded to. We need to be seen. So this mom systematically ignores what's happening with this kid. And I showed this tape at our annual conference 2 years ago, and Liz afterwards is really mad at me. She says, you make this mom sound like a monster. And in fact, we are treating this mom in the clinic. She's a very traumatized woman, and she is very dedicated. And she takes 2 buses from her housing project to get all the way over there, comes once or twice a week, and she's completely dedicated to the welfare of her kid. And I said, I get it. I was completely dedicated to the welfare of my kids also, and I needed a lot of feedback of all the stuff that I was doing wrong with my kids, because as a parent, you automatically do your behavior that you learn, and we all need a lot of feedback in order to learn to be good parents. And so this mom has good intentions, but boy, is she a miserable mom, because she's completely out of tune with her kid. But she doesn't know she's out of tune with her kid. And you don't know that you're out of tune until somebody says, let me help you to be in tune with your kid. Doesn't mean you're a bad person, just means like, you don't know what to do. Yak, yak, yak. See, to my mind, this is what happens when people have that TV on all day. They don't like to talk to each other, be attuned to each other. Shoot your television. I'm against gun control because everybody needs to have a gun to shoot that television. And so I should have edited it better, because now Liz takes time out to get people to pay attention to throwing the ball. And to my mind, this is maybe the most important tool in psychotherapy. It's called the beach ball. I say never leave home without it, because tossing a ball, even with a bunch of serious Quakers, if we'd start throwing beach balls at each other, I think a lot of laughter would automatically break out, even among the most serious among you. You could not help yourself but burst out giggling. So beach balls are wonderful things. And that's the first meaningful sound we heard in the whole tape. The sound of pleasure. Because life, you guys, Quakers may not know this, life is about pleasure. It's really about getting a sense of engagement. How do you get pleasure? When you're in tune with each other. When people respond to each other, you cannot help. Deborah has been at our workshops. When we do the beach ball stuff, everybody is giggling, even though most people are terrible beach ball players. You cannot help but giggle and laugh when you do that. And so now mom is getting a sense of pleasure, which she has had so little because, of course, she was terribly traumatized herself. And now she's singing. Okay, good enough. So get people in tune with each other. And then I'll tell you a little bit about the brain, just a little touch, because I'll want to show you a bunch more videotapes before we stop. So what's interesting to me is that we are guided by technology. And if I'd had the chance to talk about Darwin, which I always loved, had Darwin published photography books, because in his day, photography was the latest technology, and boys always go with the latest technology. And then we learn some other stuff, and technology goes by the wayside. And then when I'm a psychiatric resident, we discover brain chemicals. and measuring brain chemicals. And everybody starts measuring brain chemicals, and we start living in a chemical world that completely overtakes the world, and billions of dollars get spent on brain chemicals because we can measure them and we can make drugs. And the last effective drug for PTSD developed in 1989. We have not developed anything since the time, since Prozac, and the chemical solution has not worked. And the next thing is that we learned to take pictures of people's brains, and we started to take pictures of people's brains, and we learned a lot about what happens in the brain, and that opened up all kinds of new avenues. And very, what's amazing to me is that what we have learned from brain science has barely made it into the therapeutic process. And that's really what I would have liked to have talked about, but we don't have the details about it. But if you really love it, come to our conference. That's all about that, starting on Wednesday. It's about, if that happens in the brain, you need to treat it like that. So we learn a lot about the brain, doesn't get integrated in therapy, and then we learn to measure genes. We measured DNA, and now all the hot stuff is about genetics and epigenetics, and all the money goes in epigenetics. It's very interesting, but I don't think epigenetics is going to help us one iota in helping people to get better, because we actually need to reset these networks, and we need to do something. So now we know and have another explanation how people are fucked up. That's very nice, but it doesn't help us to make people better. So we live in a curious culture. And so what do we know about brain is that when you introduce yourself to me and say, hey, my name is Jennifer or whatever, I think to myself, oh, that's her frontal lobe, this little sliver up here. It's Jennifer, she has opinions, and she has thoughts, and she is smart, can tell jokes and stories. It's a wonderful part of the brain. And when that part of the brain disappears, the person becomes a zombie-like person. And so we need that part of the brain, but it's a tiny part of the brain. And it happens to not be where the trauma sits. And so that's where the problem is in our therapies. And I have some questions about symbolic work and art therapy, because that's all frontal lobe stuff. Rats don't have frontal lobe. Rats don't make art. They don't have symbols. But rats get traumatized because the trauma sits over here. It sits in the basic survival part of your brain. It's how you orient yourself and how your brain interprets danger. And so stuff just happens to you. You're ashamed when you're traumatized because you keep reacting in ways that you have no control over, and you feel terrible about yourself because you don't own your own reactions. And so explaining to people why they have all these reactions may be somewhat comforting, but it doesn't change the reactions. And so the question is how you change those automatic things. So let me just very quickly go over this, just one little slide. There's a whole huge background behind it, which to me is very exciting, is that when we come into the world, we come in the world with this little bottom part of the brain, our brainstem, that does all the things that little babies can do. So what do babies do? They sleep, they're awake, they cry, they eat, they breathe, they poo, they pee. That's about it. And we are programmed to find them cute, which is good because that's how we keep them alive. And they're programmed to make us feel good about ourselves so we can take care of them. But none of us really ask in this polite company, how are your bowel movements? Maybe you can ask each other, how did you sleep last night? Or how's your appetite? But we tend to sort of eschew those primitive housekeeping functions of the body. But that's where trauma hits. Trauma, I've never met a person who is traumatized who has a normal, quiet breathing pattern. I don't think I've ever met a traumatized person who has a normal, healthy appetite. I don't think I've met a traumatized person who has normal sleep-dream patterns. So it's really located in this very primitive baby part of the brain. And then, so that's where you start off, and that's where the impact is, and that eventually gets us into doing yoga and that sort of stuff, because that's the first thing that we realize might actually get to those systems. And then you find out that Qigong does the same thing, and Tai Chi, and yoga, and that all these other cultures have figured out how to deal with trauma from the bottom up. But as mainly descendants of Europeans, we don't know anything about those things. And you go to Africa, you see people drumming and moving and dancing. You say, ah, that's another way in which you can regulate these primitive parts of the brain, not very much celebrated in white post-European culture. And that is the next part of your brain, which is very important. It's the great challenge of our field. And that's the part of the brain that I talked about earlier that comes on in place on the basis of your early interactions with the people around you. And that's the limbic system that tells you what is safe, what is dangerous, what do I like, what I do dislike, what makes me feel safe, what is appetizing. And that gets hardwired in the brain. So when you're traumatized, there's a lot of stuff in the map of your brain that says the world is a dangerous place and I'm a terrible person. And how do you deal with that? And I'll just give you one anecdote. You'll see a little bit more in the videotapes I'm about to show you. Of the first time I see somebody flip is in one of my groups I run. There's a woman who's a PhD psychologist who runs a group home for sexually abused girls who gets referred to me by a former supervisor who didn't like me because she had called my former supervisor the C word, the only forbidden word in the English language. Session. No, my battery is emptying out. Do we have another battery? Yeah, I'll say it again. So she had called my old supervisor the C word, the only forbidden word in the English language, 7 times. At the end, if you don't know what the C word is, ask your neighbor, because you cannot say it. At the end of which the session, my former supervisor said, I don't think we're a good match. Let me send you to somebody who you do better with. So it is a pretty in-your-face, angry person who also runs a group home for sexually abused. Hello, hello. So one day she comes in the group, and she was one of the reasons that I got open to the next thing I'm going to show you. And she says, I was trained in EMDR over the weekend. And EMDR is this crazy method where you wiggle your finger in front of people's faces. And anybody in my world who has any self-respect would never do a stupid thing like waving your fingers in front of people's faces. So I roll my eyes, say, oh my God, another one goes with this cult. And she says, can I tell the group about what happened to me? And I said, sure, if they really want to hear this crap. And she tells the group, I had a very interesting experience during my EMDR session. I watched myself as a 7-year-old being molested by my dad. And I saw this 7-year-old, tiny, scrawny, 60-pound little girl and some huge, blubbery, white guy, hairy, smelling of alcohol, trying to get it. But it's disgusting. How can a big guy do that to a little girl like that? So what EMDR made it possible for her is to not identify with that little girl, but to take a distance and say, look what happened to this little girl back then. And that's really the first time that I heard, and then later on got to practice a lot of it, of that the issue, the core issue of trauma is to learn to be in yourself the way you are right now, to feel safe, and to observe what happened to that person back then, and to know today I'm alive right now, and back then I was a tiny, scared little girl, little boy who was different. And being able to observe what happened back then, you can say, oh my God, that was terrible what happened to that little girl, and stop identifying with her. So it was actually sort of one of the first time that I saw somebody basically being cured of PTSD by her going through a technique where she could deeply observe herself back then and say, that's the way it was. We'll say a few more things about it. So that's basically all I wanted to say about the brain, but because it's all way back in that primitive part of the brain. And then I now want to show you some videotapes. It's all very, very, very interesting, but I'm not going to show it to you. So, my introduction to finding effective treatment came through EMDR. EMDR was the big thing that opened up my mind to other ways of healing. And so the background is that some people in my clinic started to wiggle their fingers in front of people's faces. And when you do EMDR, you just ask people, do you remember what you saw back then? You don't ask people to tell it to you. Do you remember what you heard? Do you remember what you were thinking? And you call these things to mind. And then you say to people, just notice that. And you ask them to move, to follow your fingers from side to side. And you set up activation of the bilateral eye fields. And if you want to hear how EMDR works, we just finished a study, the very complex neuroimaging study that shows what gets activated in the brain that make it possible to put things in the past. So it took us about 30 years before we finally got to do that. I'm not going to tell you about it because it's like trauma 505 and not trauma 201, which we're doing. But so I forbade the people in my clinic to do that stupid stuff, but they happened to be the smartest people in the clinic, and they secretly kept doing it. And then one of them becomes the girlfriend of this assistant professor at Yale, so he's a respectable man because he's an important college, and he comes over one day and he shows me this videotape. And what you see here, right at the opening, is what is the hardest thing about dealing with traumatic stress, namely if you go there, people start reliving it. So before a word is spoken, he says, just remember what happened back there, and her body becomes the person who was in the middle of her trauma. And this is really what makes this work so extremely difficult, because when you open it up, you become the traumatized person. And so you don't want to go back there because you don't want to feel your pain, and your therapist is very unlikely to be a person to know how to make it safe for you to go back there. And so you keep sort of skating around the trauma without being able, it being safe to go there, which is really a huge, huge issue.